Okay. Jane, lovely to be here with you. Lovely to be drinking wine instead of coffee with you.
Absolutely.
It's been a treat teaching with you all week, a real treat. And it's nice to sit and chat.
Well, thank you, and likewise. It's been very good to work together.
It has been. It really has been. Jane, I'm thinking of short stories. Obviously, we've been talking short stories all week here at Arvon. I'm curious about your short stories. What draws you to the form of the short story as a writer? Obviously, you're an accomplished novelist, you're an accomplished short story writer, but thinking stories, what takes you there?
Well, I'm not an accomplished short story writer, and that's the interesting thing for me, I think. I think for a long time, I have focused on novels. I have loved writing novels. I see myself primarily as a novelist. And the early short stories that I wrote never satisfied me because I knew that they didn't do everything that a short story could do.
When you say early short stories, what are we talking about?
Well, when I started writing, I started with short stories. My very first short story that I completed and liked was published in Spare Rib back in the day, when I was at university. But it's always struck me that short story is a peculiarly difficult form. And as a writer, I find it peculiarly difficult because I quite like to expand on things and to look at things on the one hand and on the other and to explore them. I like to, explore ideas in writing, and that takes me into the novel more than the short story. And I think for quite a long time, I sort of wrote short stories that I wasn't very satisfied with, and I tended to just put them away and not try to do anything with them, and I just regarded them as little blips on the way to a novel.
Yeah.
And I would say that it's probably over the last maybe 5-6 years that I've just started to read more short stories and to really value it as a form and to think, my God, this isn't something aside from the novel. This is kind of the pinnacle, actually. You know, if you can write a really good short story, it is a piece of craftsmanship, which is extraordinary. And it's driven me back to some of the old stories to look at how I can revise them. And it's just made me very curious about whether I can actually do it. I find it really hard. Right. It's a hard form.
It is a hard form. It's really testing, isn't it? And it's exquisite when it comes right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You're talking about, so going back and reading lots of short stories. I'm curious, which short story writers lately have been interesting for you, you know, classic or contemporary, you know, who have you been reading?
Amongst my great my pantheon of great writers, Dostoevsky is very, very high.
Mm.
And I have, over the last couple of years, been rereading all the Dostoevsky short stories.
Wow.
And there's one thing which does fascinate me, which is, there are a couple of his stories which I absolutely love and which are intriguing enough to me that I want to write in response to them. And I'm aware that this is extremely presumptuous and, how can you? But on the other hand, there's one in particular, the Meek one. I don't know if you know it.
No, I don't, sadly. I wish I did. Yeah.
Okay, well, it's the story. The Meek one is a woman,
right.
a woman who the narrator has chosen to marry because she is meek.
Right, oh, I see.
And so we get the story of the meek one, which is, of course, a tragedy, narrated by her really fairly incomprehending husband. And, you know, part of me longs to write the meek one's story, to write her side. And in fact, I have made a stab at it, and then embarrassment and
It reminds me a little bit. I think it's a really interesting sort of enterprise. I'm thinking about Carver, writing that sort of a homage piece to Chekhov. I forget the title of it, but it's Chekhov's last moments. It's Chekhov's literally his last moments as he lies dying.
I don't know that.
Yeah, this title slipped my mind, but I'm sure people listening will know.
How interesting.
And then
okay.
Bernard McLaverty has written in response to Chekhov's story, The Station Master, or The Station Master's Daughter.
Okay.
And I love this idea. I'm sort of intrigued by it myself, going back to stories.
It's not to answer people, no. But it's to pick up and run with the things that they have chosen not to flesh out.
Yes, exactly.
And it's, because other writers are incredibly stimulating. You know, as a writer, completely. One of the things that gets you writing is to read somebody else doing something brilliantly, and you think, wow, you know, I want to try that, I want to explore that, I want to take that as a springboard.
Yeah.
And I do find that very much with short stories.
Yeah, I do.
So Dostoevsky, Mansfield, Flannery O'Connor, who I only started reading about 2 years ago. Right. I didn't really know her work at all before then.
She's remarkable. Mansfield and O'Connor, and especially given the short lives of both.
Yes.
Absolutely. Just moving, remarkable. So brave, incredibly brave and flint-eyed.
Yeah. You know, just completely... completely wonderful. Of contemporary short story writers, I very much like Jhumpa Lahiri. I like Yeon Lee.
Yes.
I like Michelle Roberts. I'd like a whole range of writers.
Yes.
I mean, because I think, you know, the short story, I mean, it's a marvellous form and it's marvellously various in different hands. Mm. I mean, people do very, very different things
they
with
do.
It.
They do. We had the treat of hearing you read a new short story here at Arval the other night, Davy Jones's Locker. Can you tell me that our listeners have that now on Thresholds and they can listen in from the audio download? But for those people who've just listened to it, can you tell us a little bit about where that story started or how it came into being?
The story is a found story, it's a story that was told to me, or an element of it was told to me by a friend, and the element that was told was the element of meeting the barracuda under the ship.
Which is incredible.
Under the boat, rather.
It's incredible.
Meeting the barracuda and coming out of the water and having a bit of a think about it and making the... to my mind, exceedingly brave decision to go back and, get on with the job. And so that was, I mean, it's a man confronts nature story, if you like.
Yes.
But then, I was just thinking around it and thinking of ways to play with that idea. And so then I introduced the idea of another character. And then there came the sense of, okay, well, we can have a bit of, you know, this is actually about a power play between human beings and about how you... treat the natural threat. And so I set up the character of the girl who, you know, is clearly delineated as being vegetarian, not wanting to kill things and so on. And so we know what her angle on the suggestion that the fish should be harpooned will be.
Yes.
What I would also like to say while I've got the opportunity to those who've listened to it is that this is still a story in progress. I don't regard it as finished. I'm still revising it. I mean, I read it because it's an audience of people who are working on short
stories. That's right, as we have
and
people
it's sometimes
here.
Useful, if you are working on short stories as a student, to actually see in practice that writers who are even published do have work in progress that isn't necessarily... very polished yet.
I thought it was a stunning reading and really generous of you to offer it, you know, and to open it up for discussion. I found that, you know, enormously interesting. What comes to mind, that just the image, and I mean, all of us were gripped, literally, and I don't often say that, you know, takes a lot to feel gripped by a story, but it reminded me of that bit of advice from Raymond Carver about every short story should have, I think he says, at least a little menace. I thought, yes, there's nothing like menace like a barracuda, but it was so precisely done, the detail, and, you know, to the extent that I've wondered about the research and so on involved in the story. Could you say a little bit about...
About the
research and the detail, because it did seem so precise.
Well, as I said, it was told to me as an experience.
Yeah.
Although, as it was being told to me, I didn't necessarily know I would use it. I mean, in the way that happens in life, someone tells you something and then, you know, after a bit you think, oh yes, that's a story.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, then I did the most obvious research that anybody would do. I went on the internet and I mean, I don't know what a barracuda looks like. Called up barracuda. There's a photo of a barracuda. It's got a chalky white belly and a very mean face.
Yeah, very.
And so, you know, I just did internet research. Yeah, I just proceeded.
Internet is a marvel for that, isn't it? It's an absolute marvel.
Yeah.
So that was a story in progress, as you say. I wouldn't be surprised if it lands on the page finally looking very much like we've heard it. But a story that is clearly sort of entered a kind of canon of short story writing is your story Hitting Trees with Sticks. BBC National Short Story Prize shortlist, very prestigious, 2009. I would love it if you could just read us a little bit from the story. Is that okay?
That's fine. Okay. Yes. Okay. Thank you.
I've got a copy. There we go.
Okay. I'll just read from the beginning. Hitting Trees with Sticks. As I'm walking home from the shops, I pass a young girl hitting a tree. I should say she's about 10 years old. She's using a stout stick, quite possibly a broom handle, and she is methodically and repeatedly whacking the trunk, as if it is a job she has to do. There is a boy who stands and watches her. The tree is Prunus sempervirens, flowering cherry, growing in the strip of grass that separates the pavement from the dual carriageway. I know that when I speculate about such things, I am on treacherous ground. But as I look at her, I do have a flicker, like the quick opening of a camera shutter, of Henry crouched on the bonnet of the old green Ford, bashing it with a rock. We were at the farm then, so he must have been 9. The flicker is not so much of what he did, because of course I remember the incident perfectly well, as of my own furious older sister indignation. Watching the girl today, I feel simply puzzled. So many things are puzzling. The only thing that is certain is that I cannot trust myself to get it right. That flicker of indignant fury runs through my veins like a shot of cognac. Wonderful. I can walk on with a spring in my step. Hitting trees with sticks makes me think of the way they sometimes feed remains of animals to the same species. Pigs, for example. Hitting the poor tree with wood, making it beat itself. It is against nature. It adds insult to injury. But maybe I am missing something. When I come to unlock the front door, I can't find my keys. I find a set of keys in my bag, but they aren't mine. Mine have 2 shiny wooden balls, like conkers, attached to the key fob. Boxwood and yew, golden and blood red. I've had them for years. They came from trees that were uprooted in the great gale. There is no fob at all with these keys. They are simply attached to a cheap metal ring. I search carefully through my coat pockets and the compartments of my bag. I check in my purse. My own keys are definitely missing. And as for these new ones, I've never seen them in my life before. It's worth trying them, obviously, since they must have appeared in my bag for a reason. And lo and behold, they open my door. All I can think is that Natalie must have put them there when she had an extra set cut.
Thank you, Jane. Thank you. Gosh, I love the story. It's a hugely moving story, and I also love the way our realisation of what's actually going on for the main character, it unfolds. We're sort of uncertain, but the sort of evidence emerges little by little by little.
Mm.
And that's very subtly and beautifully done, I thought. Can you tell me a little bit again about what gave rise to that story? Do you remember? Do you know where it came from?
Well, I do, but I have to say that is one of the few stories that came to me quite quickly. I mean, it is one of the very few where I kind of sat down and wrote it A to Z.
Yes.
And then thought, oh, that's interesting.
Yes, yes. It's rare, but it happens.
It does happen sometimes. Yeah. And I would say that there were two starting points in real life. And one was seeing a girl hitting a tree with a stick.
Right, yeah, yeah. I thought it's...
Because it is so bizarre.
It's so bizarre that I thought that is absolutely real.
Yeah, I mean, I was driving, and I drove, and there was a girl by the side of the road hitting a tree with a stick. So that was just an image.
Yes.
And there it hung. Yes. And I didn't, you know, it was just okay.
Yeah.
There it hung. And then I have a good friend whose mother has dementia. And, you know, she was talking to me about the stages that they'd gone through. And I wasn't at all thinking I would write about it. And indeed, it's not her mother and it's not that story. But there was one thing that was very interesting that she told me. She said, it's so weird when you find out how all this is medicalized because she keeps losing her keys. Yeah. I said, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. She said, she keeps losing her keys. But the point is, Jane, she doesn't lose them. She puts them in place. Mm. She wraps them up in brown paper and she puts them in the bread bin. So I said, my God, that's unbelievable. And my friend said to me, yeah, but the thing is, when I said this to the doctor just made a note and said, oh, yes, squirreling behaviour. Uh-huh. That's bum, 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 bum. Uh-huh. And it was like, okay, that's the medical term. It's like, it's a symptom.
Yeah.
And of course, because it's quite strange, you remember it. Mm-hmm. And I think those were the two little, probably the two little triggers for the story. Sure. But I think also that I absolutely didn't think about it. And to be honest, I thought there are too many stories in the world about old age. And I thought also, you know, it might feel that it would be predictable. Mm. So I wasn't even interested in thinking about it consciously. But the way that the story came to me was from that first line about hitting a tree with a stick, mm-hmm. because then I was actually able to get into her. Mm-hmm. And of course, then it's not pitiful, it's not predictable, and it's not ill.
No.
It's life.
No,
it's your
it's
life.
Not Ill. And she's no sort of, you know, passive elderly generic type with dementia. She's not passive in any way. She's,
absolutely not.
You know, and she's a, you know, that's actually what struck me is how individual, how resistant she is. Yeah, but also for very good reasons. So, she's quite feisty. She's complex. She's feisty. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love that. I absolutely love that. Jane, it's been a huge, huge pleasure. Thank you for joining me for wine. Thank you for coming to Threshold, so to speak.
Alison, thank you.
My
pleasure. It's been great working with you. It's been good talking to you.
Thanks, Jane. Bye.